Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
He's live. He's nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show. Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
From the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome, 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 everybody, to another edition of the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio across your local CBS Sports Radio affiliate, Sirius XM Channel 206. And the radio.com application. What a Tuesday to be here with you as we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Millions of Americans finance the home of their dreams. With their help, they could help you too. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Number to jump on in, as always, 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. You could also give me a follow, shoot me a tweet on the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb, that's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B, and also on our network's account, at CBS Sports Radio, where we do have a poll question for you today. We don't always do a poll question, but today I woke up and I was feeling a poll question, and the poll question is, will A.J. Hinch or Jeff Luhnow work in baseball again? Here are the responses. Both will, both won't, just A.J. Hinch, and just Jeff Luhnow. So get your votes in at CBS Sports Radio. The early returns, 50% say both will, 15.4% say both won't, 26.9% say just A.J. Hinch, and the rest say just Jeff Luhnow. So very interesting results right out of the gate at CBS Sports Radio. Of course, you could get on in, and we'll update those poll results during the duration of the next 4 hours that we do have sharing with you. Guest-wise for the next 4 hours, Brad Lidge, the former big league pitcher, is going to join us coming up at the top of the hour. Now does a great job as an analyst at MLB Network Radio. So we'll chat with him, a pitcher's perspective of this entire controversy and also a former player's perspective of this controversy as well. Coming up at 8:20, his team, his alma mater, lost the national championship game last night, but he was there. CJ Spiller will join us, the former NFL running back. We'll chat a little bit about that national championship game and also take a preview to the games coming up this weekend in the AFC and NFC, as two teams will be advancing to Super Bowl 54 down in Miami. And in the final hour at 9 p.m. Eastern, that's 6 p.m. Pacific, the former NFL offensive lineman, always entertaining, Alex Boone, will join us as well. So let's start with the national championship game from last night. First off, congratulations to LSU going undefeated, national champions. Absolutely love the story with Ed Orgeron leading the way and also Joe Burrow as the quarterback. It's a great story of people overcoming adversity, people being told, no, you're not good enough. No, you're not going to be the starting quarterback at Ohio State. No, you're not going to be the head coach at USC. Heck, even LSU didn't even originally want Ed Orgeron as their head coach. And luckily for them, sometimes the first person you want, you don't get, and you end up looking like a genius, and that's what LSU is doing right now. It was a 42-25 final in this one. I was a little disappointed with the game, even though it was so impressive watching LSU when they were down early, then they get the lead. The game gets a little bit tight at 28-25 after Lawrence leads that drive, and they ended up getting a touchdown, and they get the two-point conversion. They go for two early, but it ended up working. And when it gets to 28-25, you're sitting there in a game that was up and down, Clemson early momentum, LSU momentum, going into halftime, then coming out of halftime, Clemson gets the momentum back with that score and the two-point conversion. And you're sitting there saying at 28-25, buckle in, let's go, fasten the seatbelts. We are going to get a classic national championship game between Dabo Sweeney and Ed Orgeron, and then also Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow. But that wasn't the case, because LSU has been a team this year that no matter how you think a game is going to go, whether you enter the game or whether it's during the game, they find a way not only to win, but for the most part, they find a way to blow out the opponent. Yes, there's been some close games. Earlier on this season, number 9 Texas, it was a back and forth between Burrow and Ellinger. It was a fantastic game. LSU wins 45-38. Then they had the Florida game. It was 42-28 in favor of LSU. That was their second top 10 victory of the season. Then they found a way to win up against Auburn. Game got a little bit closer at the end. 23-20, third top 10 win of the season. The Alabama game, it wasn't as close as the score did indicate. That game was a beatdown by LSU early on. LSU beats Alabama, number 3 at the time, 46-41. You also then had a victory up against Georgia in the SEC title game. They were number 4 in the country. The game wasn't even close. It was 37-10. And then last night, they get the 42 to 25, as they did get the victory over what at the time was number 3 Clemson. So right there, and you also had the Oklahoma blowout as well in the national championship game as well. So when you count that all into factor, you have the game last night against Clemson. You have the Oklahoma game as well. You have Georgia in the SEC title game, Alabama, Auburn, Florida, and Texas. That's 7 top 10 teams that they defeated this season. Think about that. And some of those games weren't even close. So this is an all-time great team. I don't know how you rank them because of how many years there's been of college football. It's impossible to rank them. But they were the most dominant team in college football from start to finish. Sure, you may not always believed in them at times. At times, you believed in Alabama. At times this year, you believed in Clemson. Other times, you believed in Ohio State. But this team, from start to finish, anything that was put on their plate, they devoured it. And this team, and how I'll remember this team, and I don't want to take anything away from the Clemson run too. Let's get Clemson out of the way first. Clemson is a team that almost went back-to-back undefeated years national champions. Dabo Sweeney, what he's done at Clemson is unreal. The standard that he's set is if you don't win a national championship, that year is considered a failure. And think how tough that is for 18, 19, and 20, 21-year-old kids. That's how you're going to be judged in the public world. You're either going to be a success or a failure if you win the national championship or not. And that team was undefeated until the final game of the season. And I know people could look at their record and they could say, oh, it's flawed because it's in the ACC. The ACC had a down year. I don't want to hear it with Clemson. Because Clemson, against the big dogs of Alabama, found a way to get 2 victories. And they were looking for their 3rd national championship victory in the last 4 years. So that's a heck of a season for Clemson, but it's not the way that they wanted it to end or the way that it's going to get praise because of the simple fact, the standard they set over the last few years in this magical run that Dabo Sweeney's had, and it's going to continue. Because next year, Trevor Lawrence comes back. That team's going to be pretty damn good. Heck, they lost 3 first-round talents on defense last year, and they were still in the national title game. But that team had a disappointing end into, when you look back at it, only having 1 loss on a season isn't something to be embarrassed about. And in the big game, it was a complete 180 from a year ago. A year ago, it was a blowout over Alabama. It was, look at Trevor Lawrence. This is unbelievable. Put the bow on top of the present, perfect gift, perfect season. This year, it got off to a slow start for Trevor Lawrence. In the last 6-7 games of the season, though, I would not want to be going up against him. The only quarterback that was better than him at that point was Joe Burrow, if you want to look at it. And you see the way that you were fearing these quarterbacks. But let's be real. Trevor Lawrence in the game last night was bad. He picked the worst time to play his worst game of his college career. That's pretty much, for the most part, been a masterful college career through the first 2 years, and he'll get a third year next year. But he was high on some passes, and that Clemson team, and here was the odd thing. Even when Clemson looked like they were getting back in the game, they never appeared comfortable. The only time I thought they were comfortable, because even early, you knew LSU was going to be able to score points. Even when it was 17-7, you knew if you watch LSU this year that they were going to find a way to make it a game. But the only time they looked comfortable was when they scored that touchdown and got the two-point conversion to make it 28-25. And then after that, they got back to being an uncomfortable football team. And on the LSU side, and let's get to them now because they're the champions, they take after their coach. And no moment phases them, and they're extremely confident. And their coach told you they were going to win the game. Their coach told you they were going to be great this year. And it fed into that program, and so did the quarterback. Because I talked to the quarterback at the Heisman, Joe Burrow, and he said to me when I asked him, how do you put it into words? How surprising is this success this year? You're sitting here, you are 201 odds, favorite to win the Heisman. You're a complete underdog. No one thought you would be here. At the time, they're undefeated. At the time, he's a Heisman Trophy finalist. You have a team going to semifinal of the college football playoff. How did you guys do it? And he sat there and said, Heisman Trophy stuff is nice. All the personal awards are nice. And I didn't know who would win what going before the year started. But before the year started, I would have been very disappointed if the team wasn't 13-0 going into that Heisman weekend and going into the college football playoff. Because they believed in themselves. After the performance in the bowl game last year, they believed that they had something special. And that team is so special. And you saw what they were able to do last night on a big stage. Didn't matter if they were down 17-7. Didn't matter if the game got close at 28-25. When they needed to, they were able to consistently make the big plays. And we thought this performance up against Oklahoma, where Burrow goes 7 passing touchdowns and 8 total touchdowns, the rushing touchdown he had as well. As impressive as that was, doing 7 in the first half, you look at what he did last night up against Clemson. That is a far better defense with Brett Venables compared to what they were going up against with Grinch and Oklahoma. What they did last night was probably more impressive than what happened in the semifinal round, where he goes 31-49. For 463 yards and 5 passing touchdowns up against Clemson. And Jamar Chase was sensational with over 200 yards receiving, 2 touchdowns. Moss's kid, scored as well, had 2 touchdowns too. Justin Jefferson had a 106.2. This offense is just unreal. And we didn't even get into Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He had over 100 yards too. This offense could hit you in the mouth so many different ways, and they're going to score, and there's nothing you could do to stop it this year with the LSU Tigers. And give credit to that LSU defense too, because ATN, when you're down, you have to throw the football more. They did a nice job containing him, both in the run game and the passing game, and they made Trevor Lawrence look very uncomfortable in this one as he finishes 18-37 for 234 yards. But the bigger point here is when you look back at LSU, and there's many ways that people are going to remember this team. They're going to sit back and say, hey, Zach, they were undefeated. They were national champions. They beat 7 top 10 teams. They won the SEC. They won the division going into the year. Everyone thought it was going to be Alabama. You could go through all the accolades. Burrow, with every single award that he's won this year, every record, most passing touchdowns in a single season by a quarterback, all of that. You could go through the laundry list and give me every stat, every story, and tell me the part that you remember about it the most. But the way that I remember this, and the way that I'll always remember this team, is it starts with the coach, and it starts with the quarterback. And Ed Orgeron, once again, was someone, because of the way that he speaks and the way that he looks, that people said he can't be the CEO of a college football program. And guess what? That was the biggest baloney you may have ever heard. Because Ed Orgeron was passed up at USC, where he was the interim coach and was winning. They went with Sarkisian. How did that work? LSU, where you think he'd be the perfect fit, they didn't even want him at first, and you can't kill him because at the time, Tom Herman was a hot coaching commodity. And Herman ended up going with Texas over LSU. And they fell into, once again, a situation that USC had where they could have picked the interim coach. USC elected not to. LSU elected to do so. So Ed Orgeron is now a national champion winning head coach. And oh yeah, his quarterback, Joe Burrow, he was a transfer from Ohio State, was Mr. Ohio. You know, we all know what the numbers were and all that. Dwayne Haskins beats him out. He transfers. He winds up at, what is LSU? LSU, his first year, it was an okay run. Nothing spectacular. And in year number two at LSU, he became one of the more memorable players, not only in the LSU history of their program, but in the history of college football. Think about that. 201 were his odds to win the Heisman. He won the Heisman going away at a historical rate. He led this team to an undefeated season, and he threw for 60 passing touchdowns. And he's going to be the number one overall pick in the draft. So the way I remember this team is going to be the coach and the quarterback and how many times they were told no. And when you're told no in life, some people go run and hide and say they're a failure, they can't do it. Other people want to counterpunch back, and they deliver a knockout punch. And that's what Ed Orgeron and Joe Burrow and the rest of that LSU team did this year. Because even the team was doubted going into the year. We talked about those individual stories, but this team was doubted. And now they're standing at the mountain, and they're laughing. They're at the top of the mountain, screaming victory. They're laughing, and they're 15-0, and they're undefeated national champions. How will you remember this LSU team? For me, the way I remember it is Ed Orgeron and Joe Burrow and the unexpected success of the LSU Tigers. We'll hit up the phones next, 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. And also when we return, we'll talk about targeting. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Louisiana. Hold on a second.
Hey, guys. Hey, I'm having a press conference, okay? Thank you.
The Zach Gelb Show is on the air across the nation on CBS Sports Radio. Here's Zach Gelb.
That was a year in change. I'll never forget that. Ed Orgeron, who produces great soundbite after great soundbite, was doing a press conference, and I guess it was probably on a practice field or something, if memory serves me right. And you had a few players throwing out a football or lifting some weights. Who knows? They're making noise in the background, and he just screams out,
"Hey, I'm having a press conference. Knock that off. It's Motivational Monday."
Love Ed Orgeron. And last night, everyone, every interview, and I did this when I was at the Heisman with him. And coach, my favorite part of the interview?
Go Tigers.
Oh, it's such a great soundbite each and every time. And that's what's so cool about this. Because if you hear him talk, if you look at him, a lot of people say, yeah, that's not a head football coach. How is that guy going to be able to go into living rooms and get the best out of the best? But it's really, he's a humble person. He's confident, but he's also humble. And he knows how to delegate too. And look at that staff too. However, they got recommended to hire Joe Brady from the Saints. They get Joe Brady. And then you also have that staff that's so in sync. Steve Esminger, who's been there for a long time, he embraces that relationship with Brady and Esminger, and they win a national championship and do things not only at LSU with the quarterback position, but in the history of college football that has never been done from a production standpoint. And I saw Joe Brady actually today. He's going to be going back to the NFL. He's going to be joining Matt Rhule and the Carolina Panthers. And this tweet via CBS Sports HQ, it's been a rapid rise for the Panthers' new 30-year-old offensive coordinator, Joe Brady. Think about this rise. We talk about the rise of Orgeron and how improbable that was, and Burrow and how unlikely it was that he was going to win the Heisman. Joe Brady in 2013 through 2014 was a William & Mary linebacker coach. 2015 to 2016, he was at Penn State as a graduate assistant. 2017 to 2018, he was on the New Orleans Saints offensive staff as an offensive assistant. And in 2019, he was the national championship LSU passing game coordinator. Now in 2020, his new venture will be teaming up with Matt Rhule, who, by the way, as you know, has had a ridiculous rise as well, being the head coach of Temple from 2013 to 2016, then the coach of Baylor the last three seasons, and now getting a seven-year, $62 million contract from the Carolina Panthers. That's going to be a fun team to watch over the next two, 3 years. I don't know what they'll do in year one. You have to see what the roster is, what the quarterback is going to be, and what's going to happen with Cam. But having those two minds, and younger minds too, Rhule being 44, Brady being 30, on the same staff, I can't wait to see what happens with Carolina. And Carolina keeps on identifying their man and finding a way to get them. Tepper, I want Rhule. Giants are interested. Doesn't matter. I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse. And I bet you the offer that they made to Joe Brady, just the title of offensive coordinator at 30 years old is pretty sweet. But I bet you there was a nice financial commitment as well to get him out of LSU and to go back to the NFL. So there's so many stories like that. Also, Kalyvon Chaisson, who got hurt last year, had to sit out the entire season. He now becomes a national champion as well. That was really neat to see. And you can go on and on and on with the greatness of this LSU story. One thing, though, I do want to highlight from the game last night that is an officiating situation. I'm not going to say the officials got it wrong. I thought there was two things to look at. The one thing they did get wrong was the offensive pass interference. But at that point in the game, yes, maybe it makes it into what, a 10, 12-point game, depending on what happens with the two-point conversion. I still, LSU is not blowing that lead. They're not. If they were up 17-7 early, there's no way you would have had Clemson making that game close, except it was the opposite, Clemson going up 17-7 and the game getting a little bit tight. But there was no, once LSU walked into halftime, you didn't think they were going to lose the game. Even at 28-25, I still thought, even though it looked like momentum was shifting, I still believe that LSU was going to find a way. Just because of the way that I believe in Burrow and Orgeron. And that doesn't mean I don't believe in Lawrence and also Dabo Sweeney, but that was a Clemson team. When LSU started to punch back, they didn't, for the most part, consistently have a counterpunch. And Lawrence never looked comfortable. The entire game never looked comfortable. But with Burrow having that rib injury that everyone thought of, and the way that it was being reported coming out of halftime, you said, uh-oh, after that first drive when he goes three and out, all right, a little bit interesting. But still, this kid all throughout the year, dime after dime after dime after dime, and you could tell he was feeling it. Because when he threw that touchdown pass, and I know it was the last touchdown they scored, but when it was when he scores that, throws that touchdown pass to Marshall for 24 yards, he looks right at his coach and points to his finger and says, let me get that ring. That was absolutely awesome. But the one play I do want to highlight from the officiating, and we could talk about the OPI, it was a horrible call, but still, Clemson, you didn't lose the game because of officiating. You lost because LSU was the better team. The one thing, though, that I can't stand, and I've hated this for a long time, but usually when you bring it up, you get a lot of pushback because of player safety. And let me say this from the start. Player safety is of the utmost importance. Every year I go to the Super Bowl and I talk to these former players and I ask them about their health, and we hear about the initiatives and the foundations and the charity work that they're doing to try to get these players help. Because if you play football, it doesn't matter if it's for one play or if it was for 10, 15 years, you are exposing yourself to significant damage. And I've talked to players that have thought about committing suicide before, that have been on bridges and have thought about driving off and can't even get out of bed in the morning and don't even know where they are at times in their life. And they get caught up in drugs and pain medication, and it's really ugly. So I have a lot of sympathy for the former player, because even though they made a lot of money doing so, they were putting their body on the line. And some guys are never the same and they develop awful illnesses. So I believe in doing everything we can to make the game safer. Except there's some things that you can't do to absolutely ensure that the game is safe. Because this is an unsafe, lethal game. And the one thing for all those years that annoyed me in college football is not necessarily the idea of the targeting rule, but the ejection part of it. Because with how quick paced, fast paced the game is, sometimes it's incidental contact. And last night in that national championship game, I don't believe the linebacker was intentionally trying to hurt anyone on LSU. I didn't think that was the case. And it's so unfortunate to see a kid like that get thrown out of the game in that spot. I didn't like it. It didn't sit well with me. And what I hope the NCAA does is not take away from the targeting rule, is not eliminate the targeting rule that was called in James Glaske last night, but to alter it and to modify it. And I think you could really relate it to the flagrant fouls in the NBA, where there's different levels of it. If it's incidental, it's a penalty. You could stay in the game. And if it is something that's deemed not incidental and you thought there was intent to injure or to harm, or it was a really dirty looking play, then you get the 15 yards and you could kick the kid out of the game as well. But there's times when you watch some of these hits, and because of how fast-paced it's moving, a linebacker goes to tackle, he goes to lower his head, another player shifts their body, and it ends up being crown of the helmet to a body part or crown of the helmet to another helmet. You hate to see a kid like that get kicked out of a big game like that. That was the only problem, and I don't think the officials even officiated it wrong in the game last night because it's the way the rule is written. When I saw that, I said, I hope he doesn't get kicked out of the game. I thought he was going to get kicked out of the game, but I didn't want to see him get kicked out of the game. So I would just make a slight alteration to the targeting rule and set it up to different levels, where there's one level that if you think there's intent, it's a 15-yard flag and you kick him out. And there's another level where it's just 15 yards. Because I think there was a big sentiment last night when you're watching the game where everyone's saying, yes, it was a hit that you don't want to see happen. However, you didn't think there was dirty intent. And I understand the counter-argument to it, is you want to take any type of those hits, incidental or not, out of the game, because all it takes is one bad contact point where someone has a significant head or neck injury that alters their life forever. So I totally understand that, but I think we just have to alter the rule a little bit, and then you have to judge, and that's the tough part, what's intentional or not, and that's on the NCAA and the replay center and the refs and all that as well. But I just did not like that one play last night where it did lead to an ejection. Would you change the targeting rules? Give me a call, 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. And when we return, I have to get to something else that the early bird gets the worm was complaining about last night. And so many people were complaining about on Twitter about this national championship game. We'll get to that on the other side.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
What we did tonight can't be taken away from us. I don't know about the whole hero thing, but I know this national championship will be remembered for a long time in Louisiana. To do it in New Orleans is even more special. And, you know, this is going to be remembered for a long time.
This team is going to be mentioned as one of the greatest teams in college football history, 15-0. One of the greatest teams in LSU history, led by some of the greatest players. Give them all the credit. But, you know, that's for you guys to decide. We're national champs. Well, we're 15-0. Whether we mention it as one of the greatest teams or not, that doesn't matter to me.
Now back to the Zach Gelb Show.
Those are the voices of LSU quarterback Joe Burrow and head coach Ed Orgeron as well. We'll get to the phone calls in just a second. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, by the way, is 855-212-4227, and it's sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote at geico.com today. It always amazes me, the complaints during a game. And usually when you think about complaints that could transpire during the course of a national championship game, it would be, okay, the halftime is too long. It could be, the game is not that entertaining. This player wasn't ready to embrace the level of football that he needed to be at. This team came out flat. This team couldn't find a way to do what they did for most of the season. People could talk about the officiating, and we could go on and on and on and on about what people can complain. I was in a pretty good mood last night leaving the show. I got back right at the start of the second half, all dialed in, ready to go to enjoy what I didn't know it was going to be a great second half or not with the way that LSU ended the first half. Then the game gets a little bit closer at 28-25, and you just see what Burrow has done all throughout the year and what Jamar Chase and Edwards-Helaire have done all throughout the year, and that was just dominate. So, yes, the game wasn't as – it didn't live up to the hype, and it wasn't as great of a game that we thought it was going to be. But it's still a game. It wasn't the worst national championship game I ever watched. No way. Not even close. And that LSU story, just like the Clemson story last year, was so powerful that even when the game does get to a lopsided range, it's still so damn impressive because of what LSU has been able to do consistently all throughout the season. But the complaint that I kept on seeing, and I actually had to log off of Twitter for a little bit for a while, was every single person. And I guess it was actually led by Mraz, who all he does, if you listen to Boomer and Geo, he runs around the entire station saying, hey, early bird gets the worm. And, you know, I got my hard hat on and I'm on the train and ready to go up and early at 3:30 in the morning, which that stuff doesn't personally bother me. When you wake up, you want to send out some tweets about you being a diligent talk show host, a diligent producer, go ahead. You're more than allowed to do so. But it's annoyed Giannotti. Rumors on my staff, sources on my staff had told me that it's annoyed Tom DiBenedetto. It has annoyed Mikey B, Mike Biseglia, who has zero sympathy for this because Mikey B had to do morning drive for what, 5-6 years?
5 years. Morning drive? 5 years, yes. Yeah. Plenty of national championship game and big games at night. I've seen them, yeah.
Can you confirm sources close to me say that you are not happy with the way that Mraz is publicly displaying that he has to get up early?
You have very good sources, Zach. Very good sources.
Figuring that I talked to maybe four people in this building. Doug, who doesn't talk crap on anyone in production. Our boss, David Mayernick, who's not going to talk any junk. And then the other two are D-Ben and Mikey B. I wonder who told me that D-Ben and Mikey B aren't happy that Mraz is running around trying to get a parade for the fact that he has to get in here at 3:30, 4 in the morning, and that other people are getting upset with it as well. However, with that being said, I kept on seeing Mraz tweet about it and others tweet about it. This start time of the national championship game, it started at 8:20. Oh, it's the second half, and it's 10:45 and 11. Can we just shut up, please, for once and enjoy the game or try to enjoy the game? I understand people have to get up early. I understand that I could sleep in if I want to, and I don't have to get up at 3:30 in the morning. But before... in my life, I was once an intern, and I was an intern at WIP in Philadelphia, and had to be in at the station at 4:30 in the morning. And I still watched the national championship game. And have I complained about the start times of games before when I was younger? Yeah, I'm sure I have if you go back and resurface all the tweets. But the last few years, my stance has been this. If it's a national championship game, stop complaining about the start time and how long the game is taking place. Because guess what? Next weekend, we don't have college football. And that absolutely stinks. Next weekend, I would love to complain about how long a college football game is. Because I want the sport. And next weekend, we don't have the sport. So everyone needs to settle down. And you know what? Let's also be realistic here. And maybe you get a better appreciation when you do a national show for both coasts. The game started at 8:20 p.m. Eastern. So that's 5:20 p.m. Pacific. What are you going to do? Start the game at 7 p.m. Eastern and then screw the West Coast fan that has a job and is working at 4 p.m. Eastern? So let's think about the West Coast folk for a second. And also, it's a situation where you don't know who's going to be in the national championship game. So if you move it up just to appease the East Coast, What happens if you have, like, Washington one year, which wouldn't happen because it's the Pac-12 or Oregon? Like, what happens if you have one of the year the Pac-12 actually gets into the college football playoff and wins an opening round? You're going to screw that fan base. Now, you should adjust anyway and make sure if your team's in it to watch, but everyone complaining about the start time. In our society now, we just have to complain about something to complain. I remember when I was in, it was in middle school. I remember watching one World Series, and my dad woke me up, and I fell asleep in like the sixth inning for an inning. My dad woke me up in the seventh inning, and he said, you got to watch the World Series. You have to watch the World Series, Zach. So the next day, I had an earth science class, and I was falling asleep in the earth science class. Now, that's for two reasons. One, I was tired because the game like went until 1 in the morning or whatever it was. The other, I was learning about rocks, and they're extremely boring. So it was a mixture of both. But I still stayed up, and I watched the game. And at that time, I didn't have Twitter. I was in middle school, so it was nice. I didn't have to go onto this device and tweet, man, I can't take this. I got to get up early in the morning. This game starts way too late. When else do you want them to start it? 8:20, I think, is a fair start time. They're not starting the game at 9:20. They're starting it at 8:20 p.m. Eastern. I think it's pretty fair. If you want to say 8:15 p.m. Eastern, I don't think the 5 minutes is going to be that big of a difference. Mikey B, you got to be annoyed by that because you did Morning Drive for 5 years, and I bet you stayed up and watched those games.
Yeah,
like
I'm
the hardworking producer you are.
I'm looking forward to hearing when people have to talk about or Mraz has to talk about watching Lakers Bucks six times because that thing's going to go back and forth. And
you're right.
I really believe like it's an incredible experience. It's once a year. It's an awesome football game. If you're complaining that much, I just don't know if you really even care if you want to watch it. Like, this is it. This is the one game you get. It's the two best football teams we've seen in the country. Like, here it is. It's going to be great. You're going to root for a blowout so you can go to bed 20 minutes earlier. You're still going to feel like crap when the alarm goes off at 3 a.m. Shut your mouth and have fun.
And you probably could have fell asleep a little bit in that fourth quarter as well if you really wanted to.
Exactamungo. That thing hit a point where it was over. But you're seeing an historic quarterback with a coach that's having a moment. Enjoy it. Embrace it. Soak it in. This is what they played for all season. Just you'll be okay. You'll
even
be okay.
So, it's one night. So let's say if you stayed up and watched all the post-game coverage until, let's say, 1:30 in the morning on the East Coast. So you get up at what, 5? I know for Mraz it's a little bit different, but for most people, let's say you get up at 5:30, you got to be in the office at 7. And that may even be early. So you're a little tired for one day. You go, you take a nice stroll at about 11:45, 12 o'clock for lunch, and you get some fresh air. I think everyone will survive. Can we stop complaining in big games, though? I understand if it's a regular season game and it's an insignificant game, but you want to watch because you're a fan. But for the postseason and for the national championship game, let's stop complaining about the start time. Rudy's listening on 96.7 FM in Pennsylvania. He's next up with Zach Gelb. Rudy, what's happening, man?
Yeah, I was thinking on the targeting.
Sure.
If they had maybe the 15 yards and then maybe a 5 or 10 minute of game clock.
Interesting.
So that allows everyone to, you know, the situation to settle down so emotions get out of it. There's personal accountability. And then keep track of them. And if you get 4 of them in a season, then you're suspended a game.
It's an interesting formula that you threw out there. And the way that the rule currently works right now is if you get a targeting and you're ejected, obviously, in the first half, they use that second half that you're missing as the suspension you could play the next game. However, if you get tossed in the second half, then you miss the first half of the next game. I think it should be very simple where you have two levels of targeting. And one level is it's egregious. It's an automatic ejection. Throw them out of the game, give them a 15-yard penalty. And then the other level is simply, it was targeting, it was wrong, but it wasn't intentional, it was incidental, so we'll give you a break, it's only a 15-yard penalty, but if you get another penalty, then you're tossed out of the game. That's what I would do it. However, to Rudy's point, I don't hate it if you kind of use like a penalty box situation with the NHL and you give someone out for 5 to 10 minutes. But I don't think they're going to change it. As much as I want them to change it, because you hate to see a kid get tossed out of the national championship game last night, I don't think they're going to change it because of the sensitivity. And it's correct that there's sensitivity to it and there should be an utmost importance to it. But because of how it looked changing a rule that was put in place for the safety of players and still how young and developing these college kids are. So I'm all in favor of changing the rule and doing it the way that I just stated, but I don't think that it's going to happen because of how it would be presented and how it would look. And I think the NCAA is fine with that. But once again, there's too many times you see a bang-bang play and it's not intentional. And unfortunately, you see a kid get tossed out of the game and you hated to see it last night in the national championship game. So congratulations to LSU. Jeremy Troy, I'll get to you next hour. Hang on with us. Brad Lidge is going to join us next for 10, 15 minutes as we're going to chat with him about the latest scandal and all the punishments with the Houston Astros. It's the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.